Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Walking Session. Maz Mila here. You know how this goes. Grab your shoes, grab your headphones, grab your common sense. It's not therapy, as you know, but I'm trying. I'm going to try and get you as close to it as I can. So take all the things that I say with a grain of salt. If it fits, take it on. If it doesn't fit, throw it out. You're the expert on you. I'm not. So let's just jump straight in. So, wow, thank you for your feedback on, the last couple of episodes. It's such early days for this for me, so I've just been, really, really grateful to hear from people and to know that things are resonating with you. I've had comments about the scarf analogy from some of you. That one seems to always, ring a bell in therapy too when I do this one-on-one. So I'm so glad that it resonated with people. I'm also really, really grateful for all your questions that have been submitted. Really, really grateful. There's been so, so many, which is great. I'm getting them up in front of me as I go. I started reading them all and then I was getting a bit like, oh my God, there's so many different things people want to talk about. So I don't know how long today will go for, but I will try my best to answer each one of them. Thank you for submitting extra information around all of them. That's been really helpful so that I can sort of get into things a bit more. Today's a little bit of mixture of everything. I've got questions about situations around work, a couple of those. I've got questions around fear of change, around grief, around sleep. Business, there's just, a lot happening for everyone. Relationships, I'm just looking at them all. So there's been lots and lots here. I feel like for the sake of not waffling on, well, let's just see how I go, hey? I'm looking at them and I'm like, we might be here for hours. Maybe I'll have to break them up. I'll just see how I go. I don't want to go on and on and on. So, we'll just see how we go. We'll play back, All right, let's just jump in as they were submitted in a row and we'll go from there. I have changed all the names as I've written them down so that everybody is de-identified. And, I do need a name, but I've definitely changed them so you're staying private. And thank you for sharing your names. All right, so this very first question is from Sarah. Sarah is a mid-level manager at her company. She said that she's been struggling with leading her team effectively. She said that I always thought that showing vulnerability would make me seem weak, but lately I've noticed that my team feels distant and disengaged. How can I balance being vulnerable, but also maintaining authority as a leader and building trust, but then improving the team dynamics? So I love that Sarah has identified vulnerability as a gateway into reconnecting with the team, because that is certainly the way to go. It's not the only way to go, obviously. Again, without knowing exactly what's been happening, apart from Sarah saying that she's feeling distant and a bit disengaged, there could have been, it can be that just your team's under a pump a little bit. It can be that they're losing a bit of a momentum. We are in September as I'm recording this. So I do find that towards the end of the year, everyone does get a little bit burnt out, especially if they haven't taken proper breaks throughout the year. But certainly, as you've mentioned, Sarah, vulnerability is a way forward. Now, the way to balance this is being kind of mindful about what you're being vulnerable about. So we're not going to be vulnerable in the sense of that we run a team meeting and we fall in a heap and we say, I hate everything that's happening here. I don't know the way forward and I'm finding it really hard and I just want you all to know. So we're not going to be vulnerable in that way, but we want to be authentic and maybe showing some things that you've been struggling with, choosing something, maybe a mistake that you've made. You might choose to share, you might have a team meeting and how's everyone going? Gosh, it's been busy, hasn't it? I got so flustered this morning, you won't believe what I did. I sent this email to so-and-so, forgot to do this and had to redo it three times. Looked like a bit of a dingbat doing that.
But hey, we're all human. So you might just choose to share one little thing and see how that's received with your team and what they're like. I don't know what you guys sort of have set in place, but is there space for them to share as well? What are the team meetings, or I don't know if you're planning to do this one-on-one. But I think the way, how many do you have, you know, all that stuff, how often do you all communicate? Is it a team where you're face-to-face? Are you remote? All these things, I guess, kind of vary. But to answer your question, I think the best way to balance being vulnerable and authentic, it's important to be authentic, as well as maintaining your authority as a leader, and to build that trust, is to A, choose what you're being vulnerable about, B, show them how you fixed it and how you're also human and these things happen and they're not the end of the world, and how you came back from that, and then just see if the team opens up, like I said, whether it's one-on-one as a team, whichever way. I will try that. Try that, see how you go. Keep me posted. Keep me posted. I'll leave that one there. The next one is from, I've named this name Tom. very inventive. Tom says that he's always had big dreams of starting his own business, but he's battling with some self-doubt. He's got great ideas, but also he's scared of failing and being judged that I can't seem to move forward and get it done. What can I do to overcome the self-doubt and finally take action? Do you know what, Tom? I reckon my advice to you will be really close to Sarah's. It's kind of choosing a little bit at the time. I think for you, before we get to the bit that you're where you're going to take action, I think maybe the thing to do is to narrow down to an idea. So you said you have some great ideas, and that is already a sign of you being an entrepreneur and knowing how to to me, it's a great sign that you will do well in business. But also what can happen with entrepreneurs is that, like you said, there's lots of ideas. So the first thing that I would do is have a little think about if there is an idea in particular that keeps popping up that you're leaning towards to more than the others. And maybe that, like, all that needs to happen is you might already think of one as I'm saying that, or you might take a couple of months to just see if there's a theme or an industry, something that you're sticking with. So I think that's the first thing. And then obviously do your due diligence, you know, assess it as a business, see if it can go ahead. Look at your lifestyle, look at where you would create space to do this. I will chuck a resource for this, by the way, into our self-help section with this business planning stuff, because I've got lots of those. But essentially what you want to do is, I think that the more that you explore one idea, the more that you research it properly, the more that you sort of reassure yourself that this actually could take traction and this could actually work. And, you know, as part of them, that you might even crunch some numbers, look at the market, see who's doing it, see what you would want to do, see how you do it different. Like I said, I'll chuck a resource in and all of that kind of stuff. I think that self-doubt will slowly start to disappear because you'll gain more confidence in your business and yourself as the leader in that business. I guess then the next step will be breaking this down. And you don't have to tell anyone about it, by the way, Tom. You don't have to speak to anyone about this business. You might spend 3 to 6 months just making plans behind the scenes, and it might not be until you sort of start to get a little bit of traction that you start to speak about it. And then you're going to finally, you know, take more and more goals a little bit at a time and get to where you want to go. I did say before, look at your lifestyle, really make room for this. You literally might have to look at your calendar and dedicate time. You might say over the next 3 months, I'm going to, you know, every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday night, I'm going to work on this, or morning. I don't know what your situation is. But the truth of running a business is that it is hard work, and you don't want to quit a job to start a business. There will be a crossover period where you do that simultaneously, because it might not work out and you don't want to be broke. So that's a thing that you need to do. So yeah, I think I think that's probably a solid way forward. The other thing that I wanted to say, self-doubt is going to creep back up. I kind of mentioned a little bit, someone had a similar question around imposter syndrome, recurrent imposter syndrome. And I think that whenever you are in a space like an entrepreneurship, there's always going to be new problems that pop up that you haven't faced before or that you haven't thought of, because you might be scaling your business and things are growing, or things can go wrong that you never thought could go wrong. So this bit of self-doubt thing, like, I feel like as an entrepreneur, you 100% have to embrace it, because it's pretty rare that you're in a business where you're like, oh, it's just easy, it's flowing, and nothing new is happening ever. So I feel like that self-doubt piece is just part of the game. And, you know, business is reactive to markets. So you might be going really good for 6 months to 12 months and things change, and you have to now come up with new ways to stay on top of it, with new services, new products. So it is always doing something new, and with doing something new, there's going to be a level of shit, can I do it? And then you just have to back yourself. I think for no other reason for you is that you said you've always had big dreams of starting your own business. And I think you need to do yourself the favor of doing something about that, even if it means that you do this background work that I mentioned for 3 months and go, yeah, this is not anything that I thought my dreams of starting my business were. So I can tick that off my list and not have these what if I had sitting there. But be realistic about how much time it takes, how much work it is. Do the groundwork, and then, yeah, you might never tell people. You might never tell people. I remember at times when I was running my walk and talk business as the practitioner as well as inside of it, I'd walk with clients, and we were serving thousands of clients by the end of it, and had like 12 psychologists also working there. And I wouldn't tell clients that it's my business. Like, and if they mentioned anything about, oh, you know, like, I don't know what it's like in your work and what your boss is like, and I would just let it go because there was no need to mention it to them. Or at times I would even be in the community and people will speak about my business and I wouldn't always mention that it's mine. There was just no need. So maybe there's a way not for people never to find out, unless it's called Tom's business, how would they know? Or unless, I guess, you need the referrals. I don't know what the business is, obviously. It's hard to say. But anyway, go with that. I'm going to chuck a little resource into our self-help section, and then if you're interested, you can dive into that, and I'll leave the link as always in the show notes. All right, the next one is a student. We've got a student, let's call her Emily. Emily is a uni student. She said she's been feeling completely overwhelmed with anxiety between keeping up with her uni workload and the pressure to also have a social life. She's finding it hard to cope, as well as managing work on top of that. She said, I've tried different ways to manage my anxiety, but nothing seems to be working long term. What can I do to help? Emily. Okay, lots of things here. I believe that managing uni studies is and work and the social life is really hard. And look, it's hard for anybody, I think, even outside of this, any kind of studies, any kind of work, any kind of social life. When you finish uni, the uni study load might be balanced, like mixed with family, you know. And balance, I guess, is a thing that actually doesn't look equal. I think people think a balanced life is one where it's like, every week I do a little bit of work, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, you know. I train every day, I study every day, I work every day, I see my friends every day. That's not what balance looks like. Balance is more like, wow, it's week 4 at uni. I know week 4 and 8 and 12 is when you all start to struggle. So that's when all the assignments are due. That week, you might not have a social life, or even the week before, I should say, not just that week. You can't go out. You might be working less. You might not really get to do much exercise beyond a walk, because that will be the time that's dedicated to getting your assignments done. Those 2 weeks might be full-on assignment mode. You might not like that. You might not want to do that, but you're obviously studying to do something that you love eventually, I hope, and you've signed up for this. So we talk about that immediate gratification versus delayed gratification. In this instance, you're going to have to delay the excitement of going out and seeing your friends or doing other things, and instead you're going to do some boring stuff at the library because you need to get on top of your uni work. That's number one. So it's a little bit of acceptance of the suck. It's a little bit of like getting used to even just doing this every week. You're not, I think like one thing that I come across with students that come to see me, everybody thinks that like the week before exams, they'll sit down and study, or the week before assignments are due, they'll sit down and get it done. Focusing and getting work done is a habit that has to be consistent. Like you literally have to come up with a time planner. Again, I'm going to need to take notes of all the stuff I'm chucking into the self-help. So you need to do some time management and time planning, and you need to, according to your schedule, literally in week one, week zero, you need to make the plan, and week one, you need to start doing it. And every couple of weeks, you might need to start reassessing it because, sorry, I'm taking notes. So I also remember what to chuck in there because it's not one of those things like focusing and being able to get stuff done doesn't happen like that. It's not instant. It's a habit. It's a skill that needs to be learned. So I don't know whether you're maybe feeling your anxiety because it's all coming to a head and it's a lot to manage it all. What is much better is literally like I used to get when I was at uni, like the big, big 12-month calendars on my wall so that I could see every month by itself. And then, you know, I would block out my uni semester where that was, and then within that I would start writing down what things I do, so I would have that bird's eye view of what's coming, and then within that I would start to put, like, you know, reward might be going out after the assignments are done the week after. And look, this is really hard, and it was really hard for me because I am a bit of a, I do like to go out, I do like to see my friends, so it was hard to say no. It was really hard to say no to those things, because even sometimes like staying up late wasn't going to help me focus the next day, and being on my phone for too long, and all of those things will get in the way. So it is a lot of like, how am I going to retain as much energy as I can? What are the things that are getting in the way? What's distracting me from that? How am I going to look after myself? How am I going to deal with the FOMO? Yes, you're going to have to do some, I don't know, your Saturday night for a couple of weeks there might be doing a facial at home and watching a chill movie and going to bed early, right? But it is, and I'm not saying it's easy. I think you've heard me say hard a lot of the times, but it is continuously putting in the hard work. Like, I know that each subject that you do is equivalent to 10 hours of work that should be done. So if you're a full-time student, that's a full-time job, Monday to Friday. You could just do that. And I know that's not the reality for many of you. I know many of you on top of that are working, on top of that, like we said, trying to have a social life. I don't know if one way to manage this is dropping to less and doing part-time study so that you can manage it all. I have done that at times, and you might only do that for one semester to catch a little bit of breathing space. But it really is sort of accepting that you can't have it all and you can't do it all. Also sort of explaining it to your friends so you don't feel like there's pressure to just go out and just do the stuff that's really draining where you're left hungover the next day. You know, might be chatting to them about, can we catch up for breakfast or a walk and that kind of stuff as well. So have a think about it. It is a hard season. It's not forever. It's all worth it when you come out to the other side of it. I want to say do meditation, but I feel like meditation can be contrary to this. Sometimes when you're in your head too much and then you go and do meditation, you get into your head even more. It's hard. Focusing is hard. It's a skill, like I said. I will chuck a resource in. I'm going to leave it there. Adjust your expectations. get a 12-month planner, be real about what you can and can't do and real about what you want to do. If you want more social life and you're happy to finish studies a year later, take a part-time situation, and that might be the way to balance it all. Sorry, there's no like quick fix for this one. Meditation may help. There's apps like Smiling Mind. But if it's too much, because like I said, if you're in your head too much and it's actually deterring, it's making go in your head even more, don't. Exercise, always great. Go for a walk. Do those things. Make sure you have breaks. Reward yourself for the things you've done. They're all the little things that help. All right, I'm leaving there, Emily. I'm leaving it there. I can feel your stress. I can feel it just reading it. All righty. Where do I want to go to? What's sort of a nice leading? Okay, this one. This one will be really good. I feel like I'm going to do this one and one more and then I'm going to have a break because I'm feeling a little heavy, and I don't want to be. So I'm going to do two more and then we're going to take a breather and then I'm going to do leave the other six, I think it is, or five. The other six, five. Anyway, the other ones for next time. All right. This one is James. James is a high achiever, but he's aware that it's starting to come at a cost. He said, whenever I fall short of my own expectations, I'm so critical of myself. It does lead me to burn out and constantly feel drained. I know there's another way to do this, but I'm worried about achieving goals. If I change how I talk to myself and losing my drive, how can I balance still being ambitious but not doing it with the critical stuff? Okay, so let me summarize this again. James is a high achiever, super critical of himself when he doesn't get what he was working towards. Because of the critical side of him, he's always feeling drained and burnt out and obviously not very good about himself, but he doesn't know how else to do it. So the way to do it, James, is to practice a bit more self-compassion. And I think you're right. I think people believe that when you're kinder to yourself, that you lose the edge, that you're going to lose that ambition, but it's not true. So I feel like self-compassion, especially when you're already a high achiever and you're already critical, is just going to balance you out a little bit. I think it's going to give you a bit of a more realistic view of how things have gone, but it's also going to allow you to, while there's critical, while you're looking at yourself, when you're just being critical of yourself, you're missing the stuff that you did do well and you're missing a way forward, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. So let's say you've got a project at work and you had high expectations of yourselves to get it done. It didn't get the results. Let's say it was only you're a high achiever, so you only got like 70 to 80% instead of a 90 to 100 of what you wanted. Like you only got to that 80% mark. What you're doing is you're dismissing all the things that went really well when all you're looking for is all the things that went wrong. So what we want to do sometimes is do more of the stuff that went really well rather than getting bogged down on all the things that you fell short on. The other thing that will happen is if you're extremely critical of yourself, you might not be taking other people's feedback very openly, I guess. And it will make you feel burnt down and drained. You'll take their feedback as criticism as well and as a personal thing rather than an objective, how can we move forward situation. Does that make sense? So that's number one. I think a little bit of self-compassion and going, Jesus, James, hang on a minute. There's some things I could have done better. You wanted things to go better, but what went well? And let's focus on that as much as we are focusing on all the things that went wrong. Let's learn from the things that went wrong and see where we could have done it better. But also then I guess my other thing that I'm thinking now is like, where's your identity caught up? Like you don't have your job. So let's go to me, Maz, the psychologist, right? I am Maz. Psychology is what I do, but I'm still Maz without the psychology. I love this stuff. But if you take it away from me one day, I'm still Maz. There's lots of other things about my identity that made me who I am. I can still be a compassionate and caring person. I can still be I have lots of other interests outside of this type of work in terms of quote unquote skills or identity. I love renovating and houses and all that kind of stuff that has nothing to do with psychology. I love being a mum. I love my dogs. I love being in nature. Let's do all these other things that have nothing to do with me being a psychologist that I still enjoy. So while I would feel like I'm missing a part of myself if you took psychology away from me, it's not everything, and I know that I'd be okay. So maybe this pressure that you're putting on yourself is that because all the eggs are in one basket, maybe there's some room for exploring other parts of yourself, James, who you are at home, who you are as a friend, what hobbies you have, all those kinds of things. And I actually think that those things don't make you lose drive, they make you more ambitious. Becoming a mum, while at times made me feel like a slingshot, it has never taken my ambition away. It's placed it on hold at certain times, it's amplified it at others, it's never taken it away. And like that's, I guess, I'm in little people season, which makes things much harder. And being a mum to teenagers is going to be a whole different thing. So it's not going to have the same impact, right? For better or worse, I hear, for better or worse. But anyway, back to you. So please be kinder to yourself. Also celebrate the wins as much, you know, spend as much time celebrating when you do something well as you do criticizing things when they don't do well. It might help. I don't know. I'm writing it down. I'm going to chuck another self-compassion. I'm going to chuck another resource into the self-help space. But also it might just help for you to talk to others about, and this might not be just work-related, just people that you love. It might be a partner. It might be a family member where you say, what do you think I'm good at? Like, what do you think is something that I'm really good at? And just kind of hearing that can be nice. It can be confronting, especially if you're a high achiever and you're self-critical. But maybe just ask somewhere, someone you feel safe with. That's your homework, James. Ask him what you're good at and what they love about you. Yeah, I want you to sort of be great at work, be ambitious, do all those things, but then also balance it with the other stuff. All right, I'm going to do one more. I'm going to do one more and then I'm taking a breather. And I reckon after lunch I'll record another one for next week. But I'm going to keep asking these. If your question didn't get answered, don't lose faith. I'm going to get to all of them and I'm going to post on my social media so you can keep asking them away if you do have one or if something's popping up for you as we're doing this. All right. This one is a little sad one. Little big sad one. It says, all righty, I've been grieving my precious doggo for longer than 6 months and I'm still hurting. I grieved him before he even died. Hot tips and a love heart. Oh, lots of love for this lovely, lovely lady. Let's call her Jackie. Jackie is obviously a dog lover. It's a puppy that's been around for a long time and she's missing him. Oh, grief, 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 hey? Of course you are, and you're supposed to grieve him. He's such a big part of your life, Jackie. He's a beautiful soul that's obviously left a big mark. And, you know, this answer goes to whether you're a dog lover or whether you're experiencing grief at the moment of a loved one as well. Grief is not linear. I'm going to, again, chuck lots of resources about this in the self-help section, but it's not linear and it's emotional and physical. I don't know if you're finding this over the last 6 months. You just kind of want to give him a snuggle and a cuddle and one last, you know, experience of their physical. And it's really hard. I don't know that grief ever goes away. I know that doesn't help. I'm sorry. But I think it changes and I think our relationship with it changes. I think how much it hurts over and over changes. I think that in key moments we miss our loved ones, doggos or people, doesn't matter. I think when you look at memories, it will change. It will go from it being really painful to making you smile. I think what helps move forward is, for some people, it helps sort of having an idea of where our loved ones go and kind of reassuring ourselves of that. I think it does help saying goodbye, and I'm sure you have, but it might be more so If you haven't, do that. Whether that's like a physical ritual to say goodbye or whether it's writing a letter. I think sometimes chatting to them ongoingly can help, so they're still part of our life. I'm just thinking of my grandparents who passed away a while ago now. I've lost all my grandparents so far. I've lost a friend recently. I kind of feel like talking to them still helps. Asking them for help helps. So sometimes I'll just be like, oh gosh, I'm going through such a hard season. I think about what they would do, or imagine having their support physically around me helps me. I believe, yeah, like if you feel like communicating still helps, then do that. This is what I mean, like just going to throw lots of things at you, because grief does look so different for everyone. For others, it's just like, you know, you might be religious. It's just reminding themselves that they're in a better place and that they're happy there and that they're doing great things. And sometimes even thinking about our other loved ones that might be up there with them, that they're having a great old time together, can kind of give a little bit of relief. There is like a bit of a theory that some people say grief is quote unquote selfish, right? Because it's more about us than them, because they have obviously moved on wherever they are, and they're okay wherever they are, right? Like this journey here, now the earthly journey is for us. So you're probably grieving what that dog meant to you, what experiences you had or you still plan to have, all that kind of stuff. And it's just pure love too. Like we don't get to love without the pain. So if I could say to you, Jackie, mindful of the fake name, Jackie, if you could press this button, this red button, it will make all this grief and pain go away. You will not feel any of it. Maybe even a bit of sadness and depression. All of that will go away if I press this red button. But if you press that button, all the other stuff goes away too. The happy moments, the excitement, the joy, the pleasures, the comfort, the support, all the good stuff goes away with it too. Then would you press the button? And for some of you listening to Jackie's story in this situation right now, you're probably in such deep pain that you're like, yes, momentarily, yes. And that's where people turn to the numbing stuff, yeah, like the drink and all that stuff. But the human experience is supposed to be all of it. It's supposed to be one and the other. We don't get one way or the other. And I would encourage you not to dull it. You know, what's the point of being here if you're just going to be sort of doing this movement in my hand, and if you're just flatlining all the time? That takes the experience away. You're here and I'm here. We're all here to experience it all. I would say be really gentle with yourself. Journaling, I think, helps. I'm going to actually chuck a grief journal in the self-help space, and I'm going to chuck some info about the cycle of grief. You know, you'll go through, you know, sadness and anger and acceptance, and you jump back and forth. It's never like you go through it and it's done. You go through different layers of all of those. The life experience is meant to be all of it. So as I said before, unfortunately I can't take it away, but I do think it gets easier, and then you might be going through a stage where, you know, you might see the same dog and then it's a little bit hard, and it changes. Your meaning of what's happened will change as well. So maybe having a little think about what that dog meant. What is it that you're missing about your relationship with your doggy? How can you bring more of that into your life? What would your puppy want you to experience? And how would that, if it's father's not a dog person, how would they want you to keep living? What would they want for you? Would they want you to be always feeling sad? I'm sure given that you've even just submitted the question, you know that you've given them a really amazing and beautiful life already, and they're so lucky to have had you as their owner. So it's all of those things. Oh, it makes me like, I agree, it's so hard. I've got my two and I'm just thinking of them, and I know I'm going to be a wreck when their time comes and they're getting older. They're 10 and 9 now. So I know it's coming, but I just keep, isn't it a beautiful reminder, like I said, either way, isn't passing such a beautiful reminder of living in the now and making the most of it? And, you know, I've answered some other questions in this podcast, but letting all that fear and all those silly things that stop us just fall away, knowing that at any moment everything can change and anything can be over. I find for me that when these things happen, I kind of rise from the ashes a little bit with that knowing of shit, life is short and we all need to make the most of it and things can change at any moment, at any time. Anyway, I'm going to stop waffling on now. I'm going to chuck the resource in, access it if you like. But even aside from that, have a little moment to ponder all those things that I said. And I think that the pain that you do feel is directly related to how much you love this dog. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. All right, I'm leaving it there. Let me know if that was helpful. Send me DMs. Let me know if you want me to answer any of those further for those people that have gotten in touch. I will get to the others. I'm just going to recharge. I'm going to do the self-care myself. I'm going to go do a bit of a workout, eat something, and then I'll do more of these. All right. Love ya and leave ya. See you next time. Bye.